Whatever your background, you are now heroes. Welcome to the Movie Ladder Podcast, where we're all about cinematic connections. Each week, we're discussing a movie that connects to the movie from the previous week's podcast. My name is Zach Brooks, and I'm joined by my lieutenant in action tonight, Brendan Fitzpatrick.
Zach, not only am I your lieutenant, but I'm also your son from the future past.
Is that your son? It is.
Yeah, it is.
Anyways, we're just going to go right over that whole comment because tonight we were talking about the Tomorrow War. And last week, due to a military time portal connection, or I guess just military portal connection, we talked about Stargate, and due to a military portal connection, we will be discussing The Tomorrow War, the newest movie we've ever done on the Movie Ladder Podcast. This movie came out last Friday, so we were talking about very timely. The only Tomorrow War podcast I've seen so far.
Yep. Not a lot of posts about this film aside from, you know, some of our mutual follows on Twitter, and that's about it. I have talked to some people in the Discord about it, in the Post-Show Recaps Patreon Discord. Mixed reviews from some of them, but a lot of people saying they liked it, including Jared and a couple other people in there.
We'll get there.
I'm excited. Yeah. But unfortunately, they didn't like it enough to write in for our feedback this week. So,
well, we'll see who did write into their feedback. We're not trying to jump ahead 30 years in the future just yet.
30 minutes.
Yes, there we go, 30 minutes in the future. Yeah, so then at the end of the episode, about an hour in the future, we will decide on our next movie based on connections sent in from the listeners. Us, your hosts, have also brought our connections. The Tomorrow War is new. It is streaming on Amazon Prime, so if you have not had a chance yet to watch it, make sure you check it out before you listen ahead, because we will be going full spoilers on The Tomorrow War as we're talking about it. And if you do want to just jump ahead, do that portal, you will put the timestamp in the description for when we get into our ladder suggestion rung discussion to pick our movie for next week. But pause this podcast. Go watch The Tomorrow War. It's a summer blockbuster, Chris Pratt, sci-fi action, alien monster movie.
Thriller, comedy, action, sci-fi, something.
Yeah. Celebrate your summer with a summer blockbuster. Streaming on Bezos Prime. He might be leaving for space, but we're still stuck out here on Earth. And, of course, make sure when we do pick our movie for next week, you send in your feedback, questions, comments to @LadderMovie on Twitter. TheMovieLadder@gmail.com is the way to send Brendan your email. So send him a nice note with your score and your next movie connection. And check us out on Letterboxd, The Movie Ladder, where we post our links each week to the podcast. We also have our list of every movies that we've done for season one and season two of this podcast. And we have our watch list. So if you're looking for something to watch, our ever-growing watch list is all the movies that have been suggested by listeners and hosts on this podcast. So check that out. Letterboxd, The Movie Ladder. All right. Well, Brendan, how was your 4th of July?
It was pretty good. Pretty good. It was a nice 3-day weekend. Spent a lot of time with various friends, hanging out, eating good food, watching lots of movies. Our buddy Mac hosted a backyard screening of the movie Jaws.
Why didn't he do a backyard screening of Fate of the Furious? I'm waiting for him to watch that movie.
I'm going to leave that to between you and your other podcast co-host. I'm not stepping in that high-speed car, unfortunately. Yeah. That was a lot of fun. Not the best thing I watched this week, but highly recommend if you have the chance to host a backyard barbecue and throw Jaws up on a projector, you do it. It's very, very fun. Things are good, especially I had quite a few different movie experiences this weekend that I could delve into. And I think I talked to you about this the other day. I was struggling with which ones to bring up, and you were like, well, just pick one. And I was like, yeah, I don't think I can do that. But what I will do is talk about Friday night. There were two movies that hit two different streaming services, and I watched them both back to back. And since we're talking about a new movie this week in The Tomorrow War, I wanted to talk about the other brand new movies that also premiered on digital streaming services on Friday. And that's Steven Soderbergh's new movie, No Sudden Move,
on HBO Max, to watch. Yeah.
Which is incredible. 2 hours of just Steven Soderbergh at his heistiest, ridiculous Apex. Really standout cast, especially Don Cheadle and Benicio del Toro, and supporting performances by Ray Liotta. There's a couple of cameos that I won't spoil of people that pop up later in the movie that were very pleasant and delightful surprises. And then the other movie I watched on Friday night was the new Questlove Jean on on Hulu, Summer of Soul, or When the Revolution Could Not Be Televised, which is the documentary about the 1969 Harlem Cultural Festival. It is 2 hours of complete unaired footage of different African-American and Latino-American performers who got together and held this huge concert in Harlem in 1969, a couple of weeks before Woodstock. And nobody ever talks about it because it was recorded and no footage has ever been seen of it because the company that commissioned the recording decided not to buy it. And it sat in a basement for 50 years until being unearthed by Questlove and his team. And it was incredible. Really great music, a really interesting story behind the idea behind the festival itself and the impact that it had on the city, especially in such a tumultuous year of 1969, a year after Martin Luther King's assassination, as things are hitting an apex culturally in both New York and the U.S. as a whole with the Vietnam War and civil rights movements.
Favorite time period seems like we talk about a lot on not our favorite time period, but a time period that we seem to talk about a lot.
That's all. So performers included Stevie Wonder, B.B. King, Sly and the Family Stone, The Fifth Dimension. I highly recommend people check it out. It's a really cool cultural touchstone that hopefully documentaries like this will keep coming out that expand people's horizons.
Yeah.
And introduce
you love your documentaries, Brendan.
I absolutely, especially a good music documentary. I love. Yeah. So those are the best two things I watched this weekend. Three, if you want to count Jaws. What about you?
I didn't watch very much this weekend. I don't know why. I just think between going on doing stuff for 4th of July and the long weekend, I've been reading a little bit more. So I thought about saying finishing the first Harry Potter book was the best thing that I watched this weekend, but I'm not gonna. I won't say that. So I will go with the one movie that I watched this weekend, other than The Tomorrow War, and that is Jaws. I, too, watched Jaws on 4th of July. My second year in a row watching Jaws. I just watched it last year. Obviously, a great movie. I love Jaws. It's one of my all-time favorites, a classic. I feel like I watched it too soon to watching it previously, because I watched it exactly a year ago. I watched it on 4th of July 2020. I loved it on 4th of July 2020. I thought it mapped so well to what was currently going on in the United States with the pandemic, with COVID. I bet I talked about it on our podcast last year.
Yeah.
And so it's, having the first repeat best thing I watched this week. And this week I liked it watching on this viewing. It was just too soon. And I haven't had that experience before where I've rewatched a movie too soon to the first viewing where I just didn't enjoy it as much.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, obviously great. I am not at all disparaging Jaws. Still the best thing I watched this week. I did also watch Fate of the Furious this week, but that will
Spielberg,
be...
Spielberg, what a hack.
That'll be for discussion on a different podcast, the Fate of the Furious. but yeah, no, I mean, Jaws does a lot of great things. It's just that I could recite every line. And next 4th of July, I need to remember that and not for the third year in a row watch Jaws, maybe watch something
Well, next
different.
Year you watch Jaws 2.
I've never seen any of the sequels.
So I think what you do is you watch Jaws 2 and then Jaws the Revenge and then... Jaws 3 and then Jaws the Revenge, and then in 5 years you come back to Jaws.
Ah, yes, that would be a good way to cycle it, like the Olympics or the World Cup. So
there you go.
I did also watch all of I Think You Should Leave on Netflix, the first season of that, because the second season comes out, and people love that show. Again, I don't mean to be Mr. Negative, but I don't get the it's got some funny sketches, but I definitely do not get think it's this laugh out loud meme worthy show like everybody else on the internet does.
I haven't seen any of it. I'd be curious to check it out, but
it's a really quick watch sketch comedy show on Netflix. I mean it's 6 17-minute episodes, so you can finish it in a night. And I'm sure if you watch it a bunch of times, there's different jokes that really play. This time, like, it's funny. Actually, you know, connection to Tomorrow War, Sam Richardson is in both. Sam Richardson does have some cameos in I Think You Should Leave. Season 2 just came out, and I'm sure I'll watch Season 2 as well.
So he's all over the place right now.
Yeah, so Sam Richardson is all over the place. But I will say, you know, probably the most meme-worthy sketch from that is the guy in the hot dog suit that you see on Twitter a lot, where it's the guy dressed up as a hot dog, and he's saying, you know, we got to find the guy who did this, or we don't know who did this. That is a very funny sketch. I get why that is the one that is the most recognizable and the most mentioned, but I just think the rest of the show, everything kind of blends together. There's some funny parts, but I was not rolling on the floor the way that I was anticipating based on everybody's reaction.
Interesting.
So, yeah. Anyways, Loki also great.
So, yeah, Loki's always good.
I did not at all stick to my pick one. I'll pick one, you pick one. That's just a couple of recommendations. All right, well, shall we get into the Tomorrow War? Should we enlist?
I think we need to go back in time and then jump 30 years in the future and then jump back 30 years again.
All right. So, yeah. Well, and we're going into the future a little bit because we are going to the present of this movie is December of 2022. So we're going to talk about that. So again, full spoiler warning for the Tomorrow War. It is streaming on Amazon Prime. Watch that before you listen to this discussion. Starting 3, 2, 1. All right. As we get into spoilers, Brendan, you broke that spoiler warning and you spoiled the big twist in this movie in the first line of this podcast. Yes. Hopefully nobody realized when you said that I'm your son.
Here's the problem. Here's the problem with that twist is that it was spoiled for me in just looking at the letterbox of this movie because her character is listed as Colonel whatever his character's Forrester. Name is. Colonel Forrester. And I'm like, oh, it's obviously his daughter grown up. And yeah. I wasn't really even mad because it also wasn't surprising as the movie unfolded and set up its premise that everyone who is drafted needs to be dead by the time that they're jumping to. Mm-hmm. And then all of the recruiters have to be young enough that they weren't born yet to the point where they're jumping back to recruit people. So all the people presently fighting are the children of the people that are jumping forward to help them. You know what I mean? Like, it sets up all these stupid parental paradoxes. Like, every single person could potentially have a kid with having the exact same parent-child paradox that Dan Forrester's character
does. Well, yes, but yes and no. So, I think you're onto something interesting because Murray did not travel back in time because she can't travel back because she's alive in the present. So that's why she has to be an on-the-ground field general.
Exactly.
But there's so few people remaining. There's like 500,000 people in the world remaining at this point. Mm-hmm. And we're getting really in the weeds right off the bat on this
movie. I'm happy
to.
I would
like to back up a little bit before we get into like the mechanics. But I will say with that twist, I was not spoiled by that twist. I did not happen to look at the list. I did recognize Yvonne Strahovski. Because I've seen her, she's a big name actress. I mostly know her as Mrs. Waterford from The Handmaid's Tale, but I've seen her in other TV shows along the way. I know you mentioned to me that she was in Chuck as well.
Yeah, she's the second lead to Zachary Levi in Chuck. That's the main thing I know her from.
Right.
She's fantastic on that show. I really like her as an actress.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, they put her in a big role. She's a pretty big name actress, and I thought she did a great job in this. Like, I thought I could definitely see her in more action movies, more bigger action movies. I think she's kind of a breakout star, considering, you know, in The Handmaid's Tale, it's a dramatic role. There's not any action scenes, but I thought she was great in the action scenes in this.
Yeah.
But as soon as her and Dan start having the conversation, her and her dad start having the conversation about an hour into this movie, I'm like, oh, clearly you're talking to your daughter. And then it takes him a solid like minute or two to realize what's going on. And so that to me is sort of emblematic of this whole movie, that everything that this movie did thought it was super clever. And I saw coming way around the corner.
Yeah, I agree. And it took itself 5 minutes longer than it should have for any of the characters to come to the realization that we as the audience did.
Yeah.
When they gave us the, like, especially when he gets recruited and, like, they tell, you know, they tell them why they're being recruited, and it takes him like an extra several beats to be like, oh, so I'm dead. It's like, well, yeah, that's the only way we can.
Well, they tell him that he's dead, or I think, don't they tell him that he's dead? I know it shows up for us that he's dead. Right. And he realizes when he's talking to Charlie, you know, Charlie's theory that, you know, you can only travel in time if you're not alive to prevent any paradoxes. Right. And the people sent back can't have been born yet. That's why they're all young. You know, they're under 30 years old. So I actually really liked that aspect of it. And I do want to talk about some of the time travel mechanics, because I think the time travel mechanics in this movie are really fun to play with. And
I think so, too. Yeah.
I believe this is our first movie dealing with time travel that we've talked about.
Our first big one. Yeah. Our first real one. I mean, not counting like sliding doors type stuff, but actual time travel. Yes.
Because we had Happy Death Day and Groundhog Day, but those really aren't time travel.
They're more loop. They're time loops rather than time travel. And Stargate is more of an intergalactic time warp. We don't really know if time changes at all with the Stargate thing. You know, if everything is happening in the present, but a galaxy far, far away, or if it actually sends you anywhere in time as well, just because that part of that story wasn't really explored, so we can't take that as a given.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked the setup, but my problem with it was that it took us half an hour to really get to that premise. I mean, we spent 20 minutes setting up Dan and his relationship with his wife and his daughter and the Christmas party with the World Cup, which Olin is going to have to let me know if time period wise the World Cup would be taking place.
It would.
Around Christmas?
Yes. So what's interesting is there's a running theme in this movie of climate change.
Okay.
And I mean, this movie clearly is all about climate change. Absolutely. And, you know, because of climate change, the aliens that were buried under the ice are now, they're thawed out and they're attacking us.
That's the spoiler.
Which actually is interesting, because I was just reading an article about the massive heat wave that's hitting Siberia right now. Right. And that what's happening is that there is like these and I'm going to totally butcher it, but it's like these super intense CO2 gases that are buried within the ice. And because this ice is melting in Siberia, these gases are being released. And so it's even more deadly, that because the gas is being released, it's doing more damage to the ozone layer. So it's almost an exponential exponential impact of climate change, that the more it heats up in Siberia, the more the ice is melting, the more these gases are released, impacting the ozone layer. So it's interesting, because I was just reading that article, and that's essentially what happens in this movie. Our demise comes from climate change.
Like that aspect. I thought they actually played with that twist reveal part of it really well. I actually really liked that being the final thing. Was like, oh, the aliens have been here for 2,000 years just waiting.
Right. And so to answer your question about the World Cup, what's actually really interesting that they did with that is the reason why they focus around the World Cup is because the World Cup does have to move next year to Christmas time, because it's in Qatar, which is going to be way too hot in the summer. And so they have to have – so that's actually an impact of climate change, of the Earth getting hotter, is the World Cup is shifting from its normal summertime slot to the wintertime.
Oh, so they actually, like, did the research. Nice.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like if you follow the World Cup at all, you know that it's – you know that it's next December. But so it's really – like, you know, it's a little heavy-handed with all of the climate change metaphors, but the fact that that – is just kind of in there early, and that's the inciting incident when the time travelers come through the loop for the first time, and they warn us. I think is you know, it's interesting, and it is kind of, you know, this movie was made before COVID, but again, it's this kind of world defining event where everybody is on the same page, everybody is fighting a common enemy.
Right.
You know, last year we're fighting a common pandemic enemy. This time it's a future war against an alien species. It brings everybody together. So to show up on the world stage like the World Cup was an interesting way to start the movie.
That was going to be another question for me, is does it make sense that the time travelers would show up at the World Cup? Is this justice for soccer being the most popular sport in the world?
Like, well, you know, as you know, they could, if they would have shown up this summer, they could have shown up the Euros.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I guess, yeah, I guess next year with the World Cup. I mean, it, you know, it looked like, I think it was the finals, I believe. So they showed up. I don't know if it was intentional. They showed up on probably, you know, an event that a lot of the world was watching. Although I will say, right. you know, most of the people at that Christmas party didn't really seem to care about this World Cup game going on.
For sure.
Just a few people. So, but yeah, I think that's an interesting move. I wondered if this whole thing was going to be a Christmas movie, as we start, because we do start in December of 2022.
I'm kind of glad it wasn't.
But... yeah. Well, and I wasn't sure if when this movie was supposed to be released. I mean, it's obviously was supposed to come out in 2020 last year, was pushed because of another global catastrophe, the COVID pandemic, was originally not supposed to be an Amazon movie, but Amazon acquired the rights to stream it.
Right.
And I'm not sure internationally where our international friends watched it, if they had to watch it on Amazon or elsewhere.
I know that a couple of our listeners wrote in saying they had trouble finding it because Amazon wasn't, it even wasn't available on their Amazon yet. So some people were able to, Stefan was not able to. So.
Okay. Well, when they do have it, they put banners everywhere, all over Amazon. I mean, you couldn't miss it. They had an entire row of Tomorrow War banners when I logged into Amazon. But overall, I mean, what did you think? Did you enjoy this as a kind of summer blockbuster in the same vein as, you know, another like a Roland Emmerich, like an Independence Day type movie?
I would say that it reminded me a lot of those movies, especially some that might come up in connections later. But I had a good time with it. I think because I wasn't taking it very seriously as I was sitting there on my couch watching it yesterday afternoon in the middle of the, on a bright, sunny 95 degree day in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
You know, thinking about global warming and the fact that it's like the hottest day of the year so far. And I'm sitting here watching this movie so I don't have to go outside like that. You know, it did resonate a little, and I appreciated the themes. I think that there were some issues with pacing. And like I said, I thought that the first half hour of this where they set up the time travelers and Dan Forster as a character and his daughter and his wife and his whole family dynamic, that could have been half the time it took. I mean, we don't even make it to the time jump until 35 minutes into the movie. And I think that they could have sped that part up and it would have felt a lot tighter.
Yeah. So I agree that some of that could have been sped up. I think especially the stuff with Dan's dad, that was what really kind of like when he goes and sees his dad at the airplane hangar. And again,
it just
you realize very early that it's his dad. And I feel like the movie holds that back and they want it to be a clever reveal.
It doesn't make any sense.
It's very obvious that that he's talking to his dad. But they do have to lay the groundwork for a lot because this movie is told again, we're kind of back to another episodic movie. I mean, this movie is really kind of four big episodes. And the whole pre his time jump is one episode.
Right.
And I actually didn't mind the length of this movie or the pacing. I thought it was interesting. I thought the movie was going to be over when he comes back, you know, when Dan comes back to the present for the first time.
I thought
we were setting up some sort of sequel. And the fact that they actually go to Russia and then we have this whole half, because I didn't pause and look at how much time was left. That we have probably another half hour of the movie where they're actually going and they're exploring where the aliens are coming from. They're having a big fight against the alien. The only reason why I thought there might be more to it was because J.K. Simmons's character just had not been in the movie at all.
Right, and he's the third build. So
that like, and he's very, I mean, he's a big star. And so you don't cast J.K. Simmons for a 10-minute segment at the beginning of the movie where they're talking about their issues. So I kept waiting actually for his dad to show up and be like a deus ex machina in the future to save his son against the against the aliens. Yeah. So and I keep calling them aliens. What are they? This is my biggest problem. I hate the name of them. White Spikes.
Just call them aliens. It's fun.
Well, that name is just not at all catchy. I kept forgetting what they were called, and I had to like
the Spikers or the Spikes.
I mean, it's like I'm like it sort of sounds like White Stripes, but it was just a terrible name for like a monster. Nobody's gonna remember White Spikes.
Yeah, why the spikes got to be white, Zach? I mean,
Well, they were white though. But
it's bad. It's just bad. It's not necessary.
I don't know. It's just for the people who made this movie, the writer, and I think like some of the writing on this is just kind of sloppy in general. But just pick a clever and catchier name for what these aliens are called. Don't call them the White Spikes.
Here's my thing. If you're gonna rip off 10 other movie franchises knowingly in this movie, call them something that's akin to the type of alien name that we already know. Like, call them Nemomorphs. So that it's close to xenomorphs.
No, I don't agree with that.
Like, give us something so that we know that, to let us know that we know, that you know that we know that you're making all of these connections to other movies that you're obviously ripping off.
Well, I think that was pretty clear. Like, the allusions to other movies, I mean, they even reference Will Smith. They name drop Will Smith in this. So, I mean, they are not shy about the fact that this is paying homage to Independence Day, to Alien, to Prometheus, you know, to
the
all
aliens,
these,
to the thing,
yeah, to all of these the, different yeah. movies that it's kind of, you know, that inspired this one. I just think the name of the alien, White Spikes, it should have been like a one syllable name, something easier to remember. Nobody's ever going to remember, oh, the White Spikes are attacking us. It just doesn't roll off the tongue.
Well, they needed to recruit a Seven Nation Army to fight them back.
Right. Yeah. So. There you go. Yeah. see, that could have, that would have been a good joke. You should have punched it up with that.
I could have done that.
So, you know, we get this first kind of story and we really have our four chunks, right? We have our prior to Dan jumping, then the whole stuff with Dan jumping through when, you know, when our favorite Mike Spoonman Mitchell, his character Cowan and Chloe from 24, Mary Lynn Rajskov's.
Her Nora, I believe is her character.
Nora. Yeah. Nora, so when they're killed by the White Spikes, then we get all of the stuff really with Dan and his daughter. Is it Murray is her name, correct?
Dan's daughter.
Murray. Yes. Murray, Colonel Forrester.
Yeah.
Correct. So maybe it's all the names in this movie that I'm just having trouble with, not just the alien names. But then so we get the whole segment where they're kind of figuring out the toxin and figuring out, you know, what they can, how they can defeat the White Spikes in the future. And then we get all of the he comes back. So it's kind of our four episode arc of this movie. And maybe it's just because we've watched so many episodic movies the last few weeks that I didn't mind that structure of it. And I did like the surprise that, oh, there's actually a whole nother half hour left that I wasn't expecting.
And I thought the ending was actually like the ending snow jump and like reconnaissance mission where we only have these six people that we can send because you're doing this off the grid. This isn't sanctioned. You know, those are always kind of fun. You know, send the elite squad into the alien spaceship and some of them may, and you know, most of them aren't coming out. And that's like such a good classic sci-fi trope that I'm a sucker for it. I really enjoyed the last 20 to 30 minutes of the movie with the snow fight. I was really happy that J.K. Simmons' character made it. I thought for sure he wouldn't, and that like his dying thing would be to sacrifice himself to save his son. And
which is what almost happens, right? Yeah. So he cuts himself to try to get the White Spike to attack him, much like Jaws. You know, we've got the shark hunting the blood, and then out of nowhere, Dan comes and gets the White Spike with the toxin in the mouth.
And I really liked it. I also really, I mean, this is, you know, your mileage may vary, but despite the name, I really liked the creature style of the aliens and especially the effect of them like eroding from the toxin was like really grossly effective.
I did like the green goo that comes out from the toxin. I thought that was great. When Charlie has the chainsaw and he gets the green blood all over him.
That part is amazing.
Good. My issue, I think, with them being white and having our climactic scene take place on snow is they just kind of blended in with the snow a little too much.
True. But this is the thing is that they weren't white when they fell out of the cocoons. So I'm wondering if they turned white because of that once they hit the atmosphere because CO2
or the ash.
Maybe I'm just making it up.
I thought that they were white. I didn't know that they looked
different. They were darker in the pod when they, but maybe that was just because of the disintegration.
Yeah, I think that was just the goo that was all over them.
Okay.
But I do like when we were in the future and a lot of our battles with them took place in dark backgrounds, you know, the stairwell, yeah. The tunnel.
The stairwell scene is very good.
So, yeah, so they did stick out better there. And overall, I actually thought the action in this movie was pretty good. It was really exciting. There were parts that I thought were a little hard to see, especially like some of the, like the stairwell fight was good, but then like everything surrounding the stairwell fight, it was just really dark and it was kind of hard to see exactly what was going on.
When they're running around in the street and jumping from like car to space to, it was really hard to kind of tell because again, I think that was the, with all of, when you make a post-apocalyptic movie where the entire world is covered in smoke from burning earth, it's really hard to show your creatures and know, and your actors and know what's going on in that movie. So, I mean, that's sort of the problem that a monster movie is going to have when you have it set in a environment that has to be covered in fire and ash and smoke. It's going to be hard to tell what the F is going on sometimes. And that's why the stairwell scene was much cleaner and clearer than when they were outside in the environment. So,
yeah. And I, but at least like them being white, they do stand out a little bit. And I didn't, it's not like they didn't stand out in the snow. I just think there could have been a little bit more contrast between the way that they looked and the, and the bright white snow all around them. But in general, I thought the creature design was cool. I liked all the different tentacles that they had and, you know, it's, it, it was, they, you know, it was a fun monster. I mean, it was like, it's not a monster. It was definitely derivative of like the Xenomorph, though. I can definitely see that and some other movie monsters. I'm glad that they weren't so big that they weren't like Godzilla sized where they can't fit on screen, that they're at least like, you know, twice the size of the humans basically that they're hunting.
Yeah, they're somewhere between a, you know, Xenomorph and like, I don't know, another alien that's around that size. Like they're
Like the Independence Day aliens.
Yeah, the Independence Day aliens.
And you know, there were some shots of like thousands of them running along the coast or climbing up the wall in the what do they call it? Deep Seawell, I think, is where Deep Seawell Deep Seawell 9, which I'm assuming is an allusion to Deep Space Nine. You know, as we're talking Stargate versus Star Trek versus this movie. But, you know, some of the visual effects, again, not the most sophisticated CGI in this movie. Some of it looked very computer animated. But I'm not sure how much COVID affected the filming of this and the production of this. For this kind of movie, like, it doesn't have to be the greatest CGI. It just needs to be passable and fun for me to enjoy it.
Yeah, and I thought it was pretty passable. I mean, this isn't the best, you know, sci-fi action movie. I don't even know if I'll ever rewatch it, but it's you know, it's not a bad entry to the ridiculous summer blockbuster genre, you know.
No, I don't think this is not Independence Day. This is not a classic, not one that I would go back to. I really don't think there was much quotable or quippy in this movie, although I do think there was especially the Charlie character. Was really fun and really funny. And I actually thought it was interesting that we had multiple comic relief characters in this movie. We had Cowan, played by Mike Mitchell, who's one of the hosts of the podcast Doughboys that you and I both listen to. And he gets killed early on. I was not expecting him to get killed so early in this movie.
Well, here's the thing is that, you know, I said this to you offline, and I was actually surprised he made it as far as he did, considering, you know, I mean, if you're a Doughboys listener, Mike has been talking about this movie for months on the Doughboys podcast, and he always wants to talk about the stairwell scene. And so I thought for sure the stairwell scene was going to be where he died. And when he made it past the stairwell, I was like, "Yay, Mitch!" So I was really worried that that's where he was going to die. So he made it a solid 15 minutes longer than I thought he would in this movie. So
and I mean, you know, I think like you could definitely draw parallels from his character to like the John Candy character in Stripes, and you know, kind of some of the comic relief sidekick, you know, smaller role characters in these military movies that we've talked about recently.
Yeah, they're like, "What the hell am I doing here, guy?"
And that's what I also really liked is I liked the way that the draft played out, and we just see how the world has changed in a year. The movie jumps forward early on to a year later. We get this news report montage where they just kind of narrate everything, give us all this exposition about what's been going on over the last year since we first learned about the future war and we had the time travelers come back. And then when we see, you know, the group that's about to be sent through the portal, and we see all the people who have been drafted, we just see it's such a random assortment of older soldiers. Yeah. You know, we see these people who are scientists and, you know, who are, you know, who have all these lives that they're leaving behind. And it again, it's a, you know, another theme that plays in this movie a lot is, you know, the PTSD and veterans who come back from war and kind of how they're impacted from that.
Yeah. We haven't talked about Edwin Hodge yet as Dorian, who is on his third tour of duty through the loop.
Mm-hmm.
In this, and he is a, turns out he's a cancer, or, well, he's not a cancer,
he's a future cancer, yeah, he's a cancer. Future
cancer victim.
Yeah.
And is that what you call cancer people, cancer victims? I don't know. Cancer sufferer. That's the word I was looking for. And so he decides that he wants to go out his way in continuing to enlist and continuing to go on this mission until either he dies or the mission is complete, rather than succumb to cancer. And like, that's incredibly like heartbreaking and like gripping as a character. It's the sort of character that, like, you don't generally see in these
movies. Well, yeah, because usually in these movies, people don't have future knowledge of how they're going to die.
Exactly.
Do we know how Dorian knew he was going to die of cancer? I can't remember.
I think they told him at some point. Right.
Did people in the future, like, he found that out when he was in the future?
He must have found it out on one of his future, yeah.
Yeah.
My best guess without any knowledge of, you know, because we don't see anything, is that he must have on his first tour run into someone that he knew, like, you know, that was like a family member of his or the son of a friend of his who knew how he died.
And he got, yeah, or he looked it up or something. Yeah, I think that would make sense. On his first tour that he learned that. Yeah. So I have two questions here. And I want to put a pin in some of this for future time travel talk, because there's a whole thing I want to talk about, like timelines, especially as we're watching Loki, like branch timelines that come out of this, because I don't know if the time travel mechanic make a lot of sense. But one thing that Dorian, I think, you know, I really liked his character too. He's kind of that silent but deadly type, and he doesn't say a lot in this movie, but he is really effective, and he's clearly the most knowledgeable of everybody in the group into like what they're getting into and how to defeat these white spikes. So, you know, he tells right after the stairwell fight, he tells Dan, neck or the belly, that's where we can get them. And so we learn very early on, which again, this seems like valuable information that should have been told to them in training. Instead of just showering them with 200 bullets that aren't doing anything.
That was the main problem I had throughout the movie as well, is that even after they get that knowledge, there's no seeming use of it until the very end of the movie, because they still just shower them with a million bullets every single time they fight them, instead of trying to do anything strategic to get them in the vulnerable spots.
Yeah, you know, it makes no sense that in any of their training that nobody who's training them is like, hey, here is a like really good knife, make sure you get him in the belly or the neck, or like, here's some tool, or you know, aim for the neck. Like they never use that strategically.
Yeah, I mean, Lieutenant Hart, maybe bring that up right before you send them through the portal.
Yeah, it seems like, I mean, I know they had to rush to send them, but it really, they armed them with zero knowledge whatsoever.
Yeah, and it also kind of was surprising to me, and I don't know that I liked it, is that, so we're introduced to Dorian as this guy who's been through the portal three times and obviously has the most experience, but yet when they land, like, Dan is put in charge instead of Dorian. And I'm like, well, wait a second. Why does he get to suddenly be the company commander?
Nepotism.
And it's it's nepotism. That's why.
Because Murray knows that it's her dad, and she's like, oh, but she's like, he knows. He's the most effective. And I don't know how much future knowledge Murray was working with. Again, the version of Murray that we meet, her dad had run out on them for a couple years and then died in a car accident. So
on her 16th birthday, apparently.
Right. So it seems like that version of Murray is like no longer exists, because the future gets changed by the end of this movie.
For sure.
But
which is what kept me rolling my eyes at the end when he's trying to save her life. And I'm like, but she's not the daughter that you're going to. By going back in time with the serum, you're going to save her. So don't stop trying to save her in this moment. Like,
yeah,
I
just don't understand. Like, I don't understand it. And I guess this is when we get into the time travel a little bit. Like, so what happened every previous time? Like, he must not have come back with the serum. He must not have gone and, you know, and found the white spikes in Russia. But what happened and then what caused him to...
But this is the one time we know about. This is the problem.
Right. So we never saw any other time. So the time before it, and assumingly every other time before this, he came back, he failed, and then he was just so upset that he couldn't save his daughter in either timeline, he ran out and he was depressed. Is that what we're supposed to assume?
Yeah.
Because she says to him that he ran out for, you know, 2 years and his, like... That, you know, he suffered. And I think, again, this is like the movie trying to talk about PTSD and soldiers coming back from the war. And I think that they definitely touch on that quite a bit. And I think it's an interesting, you know, to talk about not soldiers coming back from like Iraq or Vietnam, which is both are mentioned, but soldiers coming back from war that hasn't happened yet and having PTSD from that.
Right.
So, but I just don't understand that timeline. And now they came back. I actually thought for a while at the end of the movie when they're in Russia and they release the white spikes, I thought they were actually going to cause the war to start sooner.
That's what I thought too, yeah. But also the other part of it is that it's not necessarily that it's a different timeline with his daughter. It's that it just hasn't – it's like on Lost. It's not that it's a different timeline. It just hasn't happened yet for him.
So do you think that even at the end of this movie, he disappears for 2 years and then dies at the same time?
No, not at all. But he would have if he hadn't gone through the ghost draft. You know what I mean? If he hadn't gone through the ghost draft and been sent through the portal, he would have.
But I think he always went through. I think he always went through the draft. He always got drafted into that future war. It's just that for some reason, time he came back successful with the toxin.
See, I took it a different way.
So you think he never got drafted the other time?
Is that his being drafted changed what his future would have been? Like he. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah, and I just don't know if the time travel actually makes any sense. Like, I think we're pouring over something that actually just is not well thought out. And you know, by the end of this movie, so we're seeing the white spikes get released early, and seemingly they're all killed. But it would be, and I watched to see if there's a post credit scene for this movie, and there was not.
I thought
it would have been really interesting if there was like one remaining white spike that they didn't kill, or one egg, or and I guess if there's a sequel, they could just kind of postscript that in. But you know, again, it would be an interesting of like whatever happened, right? That they trying to prevent this war from ever happening by playing God, by having this hubris of man that they think that they can do anything without any consequences, that actually this elite group that we thought we were rooting for is the cause of the Tomorrow War happening in the first place.
Right, which lends itself to a sequel. Like, yeah, I mean, I could see that.
I mean, that's straight out of Terminator 2, right?
Yeah, it's Terminator, it's Lost, it's, you know, it's all.
I guess it's right out of Terminator 3, not Terminator, the man kill, which there's definitely some Terminator aspects in this as well.
For sure.
Yeah, I just don't quite get, like, who has what knowledge in the future? What did Murray know about her father? How did she know to get her father drafted? And when he came
Did she get him drafted? I mean, did she definitely get him drafted intentionally?
I assume that that's how he got pulled, was she did that because he was the only one she could trust with this information.
Got it.
But
okay.
Her timing is so convenient that she brings him for this. This is the last jump that they can make before the facility is destroyed. Right. And she knows that this is the time that I can create the toxin.
Right.
It's like, why not any other time?
Yeah, it's Terminator. It's John Connor sending his dad, Kyle Reese, back in time to bone his mom to try to get spoilers for Terminator to try to have the war never happen or because the war has to happen.
And this is like the opposite. I mean, this is a twist on the Terminator plot where instead she's bringing her father to the future to save the past.
Right. Instead of sending Kyle Reese back in time.
Yeah. Right. What I don't like is that Dan's an idiot. Dan gets back with the toxin, he's like, all right, what we got to do is we got to reproduce the toxin and then go back to the future to kill them all. It's like, no, Dan, you got to destroy the source. You got to find the source. Yeah, and he eventually figures that out. But it's like, you got to find the source of the white spikes and take them out before they become
corrupt. Luckily, he has 2 to 3 people around him who are way smarter than he is, you know, including, and this is, you know, an homage that I picked up on, is that basically his student who comes in to be the volcano expert in a scene that is basically the Donald Glover scene from The Martian, where here's this kid genius that's going to like solve the plot in 5 minutes and then peace out. But, you know, I mean, I really liked it.
I have written the fourth line of my notes. I have written Chekhov's volcano. Because I knew when they brought up the volcano in that first scene, I was like, okay, so the volcano is going to be either the source of these, or is going to, they're going to have to use the volcano to distribute something to kill them. Like, the volcano was going to play a role in figuring out, you know, these. And again, that's where, like, I figured that out pretty quickly. I think anybody paying attention would figure some of these things out pretty quickly. Yeah. And but the movie thought it was very clever with these reveals. And the movie's like, I bet you forgot about that volcano.
Right.
We did that.
So do you think it's a better reveal that the aliens were always here because they crashed back in 953 whatever and got frozen in the ice after the volcano? Or do you think it would have been a better reveal if there was no alien spaceship? The aliens had always been here because they lived here and were like buried in the ice by the volcano.
I mean, like, if it was, it could have just been like an ancient species of dinosaur, basically.
Correct. Yeah, that was where my brain went until they actually said that there was a ship. Like, my brain was like, what if the aliens were always here?
I like that. It's the aliens, and they kind of allude to like the travelers who had the white spikes in their possession were like intending to use them as some sort of weapon.
Right.
And we don't know much. And there definitely is room to kind of build out some of these stories if they wanted to do sequels. And I think a sequel to this movie would be, you know, depending on who's in it and how they make it, I think it could be interesting and I would probably watch it. Yeah. But I prefer that than to them being some version of dinosaurs, considering Chris Pratt is the lead in this movie.
Fair enough.
And like that, it's too close to Jurassic World.
But I couldn't help that being where my mind went because Chris Pratt is in this movie, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, Chris Pratt and aliens trying to destroy worlds, I guess you could also go, you know, to Chris Pratt's other big roles.
Yeah, so. I mean, all the best Chris Pratts have daddy issues, so, you know.
What did you think about cast-wise in this movie? Like, what did you think about, we've talked about some of the smaller characters, smaller roles in this, but, you know, what do you think about Chris Pratt as the lead of, as Dan Forrester?
I definitely agree with, you know, one of our comments later. I think Chris Pratt is currently number 4 in the Chris ranking for me, but that doesn't mean that I don't like him. I mean, I still find him to be a pretty fun actor to watch, but I don't find him as wittily charming as I used to.
Yeah. In early Guardians of the Galaxies, he had like a real Harrison Ford feel to him.
Yeah.
Exactly. And in this,
he doesn't have that anymore.
Yeah. And in this movie, he's just kind of like generic action dad in this
and
movie.
And I think part of my problem with it was that, so Pratt is supposed to be a science teacher who hasn't been in the military for 15 years. He should not have the Star-Lord abs of steel. You know, he should look worse.
Well, he used to be that, you know, get Parks and Rec era.
He should have much more of a dad bod than he does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not a daddy bod, but a dad bod. And that, so I think that's part of it for me, is that when they were doing the physical on him and he took off his shirt and he looks like he's in superhero form instead of average dad college professor form, that bothered me.
But that's what you get in, you know, a lot of these like action movies, especially Roland Emmerich ones, you know, thinking of like San Andreas or Skyscraper.
Where the Rock is a geologist.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Where the Rock, Rampage.
Right.
I mean, that's just something that kind of comes with the territory with like summer blockbuster action movies, that you're going to have the, you know, the buff dad is the lead. Right.
You don't get the Jeff Goldblum anymore, or the Bruce Willis in Die Hard.
Right, where they're a little bit flubby, flabby.
They're a little bit flabby.
Yeah, but one thing, and you actually brought this up, is his two tours in Iraq. So, you know, we find out that his dad was a Vietnam veteran.
Yep.
Dan is an Iraq veteran, Iraq war veteran. And what's really interesting, and I thought this was a great way to drive home kind of just the effect of war and how long these wars can last and the impact that they have, is that he served 15, you know, he served 15 years ago in Iraq. So Iraq has been going on so long that he'd served 15 years ago. The future war that they're trying to prevent, which feels like it's so far in the future, is 2060 is when they're going to, I think, or 2050 is when they're going. That's 30 years in the future. So that's only double. That's only twice as long as it's been since Iraq. And so it feels like it's so far in the future. But if you think back to when Iraq started, like that feels like that was not that long ago.
Or like, I mean, Vietnam was, you know, in the mid 60s, which is now, you know, what, how many years ago now? 60 years?
It's years.
Like, so actually that, I think that's a pretty intentional juxtaposition, is that, you know, you're dealing with wars 30 years apart.
Right.
War veterans, you think of, like, all 30 years apart from each other.
Right. But we always think about, and especially when you think about climate change, it's like, oh, climate change, you know, that's a problem way in the future. That's something that, you know, we won't have to deal with impacts of, you know, until, you know, 2050, until 50 years down the line, 30 years down the line. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, that's only actually twice as long as it's been since somebody was serving the Iraq war.
Right.
And so that's again one of those things that this movie did that I think was an interesting way to just be a little bit different than your general, like, it's a little bit smarter than some of the other movies of this ilk.
Right.
So, and I know, I think we have some really good feedback from people too. So I think, like, we can actually, that I know, like, Jeff, for example, wrote a really long note, and I think there's a lot we could talk about from Jeff's feedback. So I do want to hold some of this, but I had a couple other questions for you.
Yeah, hit me.
All right. So the first is, how did the vial not break when Dan falls back to the present?
Yeah.
Straight on where he's carrying the vial.
Yeah, I mean, come on, man. I mean, because the plot needs him to. Because he's wearing a padded vest that keeps things inside it safe, like bullets.
Yeah.
So the bullets don't explode on impact when you fall.
Right. I guess that's the same as same vein as, like, why are they shooting these monsters when they know that the belly and the neck is where they're actually vulnerable? Like, I guess it's just you hope that they hit something.
Yeah. One out of 100 has to hit, right?
Right. Yeah. Well, they didn't seem like they were very effective, except that kind of slowing them down a little bit. Let's see what else. I like the 7-day tour idea that, you know, everything is in there's like the Sabbath that the, you know, we don't really know why the white spikes take their Sabbath once a week, but that's when the jumps occur. So I thought that was interesting. I don't know if the passage of time was effectively conveyed, like all of a sudden it was 20 hours before he had to go back, and I didn't know where any of that time went.
I didn't either.
But interesting, actually, I'm going to just say, that's not going to forget it, but in terms of connections to last week's movie, Dan is going to die in 7 years. He's on a 7-day tour of the future. And the number 7 came up quite a bit in Stargate. So
That's the seventh Chevron or Chiron or
Exactly. So, so we have Dorian, who goes 3 times because he knows that he's going to die in a few years from cancer and he wants to go on his own term. Why aren't the military or the future fighters who are coming back and drafting people, why aren't they actually using that as a selling point? This future knowledge of people saying, hey, you're actually not going to be around in very many years. Like,
because they
that's more of a reason to volunteer you.
Think about how mentally fucked up that would make people, to give them free knowledge of everything that's going to happen to them in the future. Like, that's oh my God, I just thought of another connection.
I mean, I guess that's true, but I guess it actually, like, you know, they can't send people back when they're still alive because it could be, it could create a paradox. So I guess by telling somebody that they're going to die in 7 years, you're creating a paradox where
they could,
but it's unfortunately, this movie is full of paradoxes because if Dan comes back with the toxin, stops the aliens or the white spikes from ever attacking the world, then there's no reason to ever create the toxin that he comes back with in the first place.
Exactly.
So that's where, like, these time travel mechanics, unless we're dealing with branch universes, which very fresh in the mind right now as we're watching Loki, I think that's the only way this makes sense, is that there's just different universes.
So it's possible that the future that the soldiers traveled to is not based in the past that they came from, is what you're saying.
So it's based in the past that they originally came from, but it is no longer the future that they're in the end of this movie.
Exactly. So what you're saying then about Miri experiencing her dad dying 7 years after he left and him being a bad dad and then dying on her birthday may not have happened in that original timeline, but only happened to the Murray that he meets in the future.
Right.
Not necessarily the Murray that happened in the past.
Yeah, I don't think we know which Dan that happened to. Definitely a Dan. I don't know if it happened to the Dan that we meet at the beginning of the movie. If like that's a version of him that came back unsuccessful without he had met his daughter in the future, but he wasn't able to save the toxin. But this version who gets the toxin back, or maybe it's even a version of him that is unsuccessful figure out how to use the toxin. He comes back with the toxin and he's unsuccessful figuring out exactly how he can utilize the toxin to stop the white spikes. And that's what makes him depressed and go off on his own and be elusive. We just don't know. And we don't know what other ripple effects Dan has by then going to Russia, injecting the toxin. And kind of at the end of this movie, like, is everything just smooth sailing from here? Or did he cause some other reaction that will occur?
Maybe there's always a bigger fish. There could be another alien.
How do we know there's only one ship?
Right. That's also true. Yeah.
Like they found the one ship, but there could be, I mean, there are millions of these white spikes running around in the future. So, I mean, maybe they all derive from this one ship, but
it didn't seem like there were enough of them to have made millions in 30 years after they thaw out.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they just like lay eggs, right? Like they're like, they're like insects. So that's how they can replicate so fast. But I mean, you would think there's all kinds of timeline implications that like the Time Variant Authority needs to come in and clean up this timeline because it's a total mess.
Yeah, for sure. It's a mess. Yeah,
yeah. I agree. So
only Owen Wilson was in this movie.
Yeah, exactly. All kinds of paradoxes and time travel mechanics. What did you think of the time as a river analogy? So I don't think I've ever seen that before where there's kind of two points in time and the river just flows and you can only go between these two points and the present and the future both move together. And you can only do that.
Like a rubber band. That's why I thought that your initial premise that he's not going back to the past that he knew couldn't be right. Because if time is a river, then it is.
Whatever. He is going. I never said he wasn't going back to his original past. He does go back to the original past that he left. But what he does is his actions are changing that future. So that future that he had gone to and came back from no longer exists because he changes the future.
Then that's not the same river. Time isn't a river then. Unless this is what always happened. Unless it's whatever happened and
I don't think so. Because what happened, like, that's why this is either a paradox or it's a branch reality, because he's now changed the future where the white spikes are defeated, probably.
So he put a dam up in the river, basically.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
He created a dam in the river.
But how many other versions of this reality exist where, you know, this is like sliding doors, butterfly effect, crazy. It's not explained at all in this movie. And there's tons of, like, my nose is bleeding right now from all of the possibilities from the time travel. And when you talk through it, there's just too many paradoxes and holes that don't quite make sense.
If anything should go wrong the rest of this podcast, Desmond Hume will be my constant.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So my last question for you, what do you think of the title, The Tomorrow War?
I actually kind of like the original title better. I kind of like Ghost
Draft. What was the title? Ghost Draft.
Yeah. I don't like Ghost Draft either. But Ghost Draft sounds a little too close to Ghost Protocol. Mm-hmm. So maybe not. But Tomorrow War is fine. But it does also sound kind of cheesy. But this movie was a little cheesy. So
right. It was cheesy. But it's also the war isn't tomorrow. The war isn't 30 years.
Right. Tomorrow's war. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, do we say, like, that's tomorrow's battle? Like, do we talk about climate change?
I mean, we do kind of do. Yeah, we say, you know, it's not happening now. It's a word, because that's kind of how the climate change battle is described a lot of times in politics, is that we have to save this future not for us, but for the children of tomorrow.
Right.
You know?
I don't know what would have been a better title. Even the Future War, I think, might have been better than the Tomorrow War. because it just like it didn't it wasn't about tomorrow. I mean, I guess like, you know, figuratively it's about tomorrow, but it's I don't know.
Tuesday's war.
Yeah. Exactly. So, I don't like Ghost Draft. Ghost Draft sounds like a Ghost Rider fantasy like Fast and Furious movie. Like you're drafting behind a ghost.
If you had to draft five ghosts, who would you draft?
Casper.
kidding. We're not going down this hole.
Slimer. Casper's the only one I can think of. Who else?
Slimer.
Oh, Slimer. Yeah, duh.
Jacob Marley.
Yeah, that's another good ghost. The ghost from The Simpsons.
Ooh, good one.
Oh, it's actually just Lisa. Or I'm sure it's Maggie or whatever. And we need one more. What do we need? We need one more ghost.
I'm not going to spoil a movie. Otherwise, I would.
Ghostface Killer. Also,
there you go. Ghost in the Shell.
It's a ghost. Ghost Island. I'll just drop all of Ghost Island.
Ghost Dog.
Yeah. All right. Let's get into feedback because I know Jeff's got a long one. Maybe this will like on Jeff's. I kind of want to stop after every sentence discuss because I read it when he sent it to me last night in advance.
Yeah, so. It's a nice one, Jeff.
Yes. So all right.
I will let you read it.
From Jeff. This is a pretty solid action adventure movie, and that it kept my attention the whole time, and overall, I did like it. I agree with that. This definitely kept my attention the whole time. I had a lot of fun watching it. This is a good one. This was like just a good, like not the best movie, obviously some old, but was fun. And I didn't look at my phone once except to take notes. All right. He goes on. Some things that worked for me. Chris Pratt is solid. Although for a bit, I thought he was going to screw up the saving of the future Earth like Star-Lord screwed up the MCU. Yes, totally agree. I will never forgive Star-Lord for his behavior screwing up the Marvel Cinematic Universe in a certain Avengers movie. And I judge Chris Pratt for that. I judge Star-Lord for that, for his actions. They were so close. Stupid Star-Lord. So, all right, then he says, the characters at that point seemed pretty similar. Agree. The space aliens were excellent, very terrifying and scary. The action was great, and the overall feeling was very intense. Then he goes on. What didn't work? The fact that his daughter would have to be 40, but looks so much younger. Well, the actress is 38. She just looked to be in her 20s in the movie. Does that bother you, Brendan?
I don't necessarily agree with that, but I mean, sure. I mean, everybody looks younger to people who are older than that person. That's the thing.
Yeah.
So, I thought it was fine.
I was thinking she had to be in her early 40s, and I was like, she looks good for her early 40s.
Yeah.
38, so she's a couple years older than me.
Makes sense to me.
I mean, again, I thought, like, for me, her and Sam Richardson, Yvonne Strahovski and Sam Richardson, I thought were the two best performances in this. I wish that we got a little bit more Sam Richardson, because he did add that little bit of levity. But then there's the scene where we get Charlie after he's come back, and he's got this PTSD because he abandoned his post, and he was hiding for 6 days.
Yeah, it's pretty screwed up.
Yeah, and that was a really interesting mechanic that this movie introduced, was that you're brought back after 7 days, whether you're like, as long as you're still living, you're brought back. So you could do what Charlie did and just hide for 7 days.
Yeah.
And it's not like other Tours of Duty where, you know, you are just automatically brought back.
Dismissed. In the actual military, he would be like brought up on a court martial.
Well, I mean, and that's that connects back to Thin Red Line, like the beginning of Thin Red Line that we had last year.
Sure.
And so that was it. That was definitely an interesting mechanic. All right. Sorry, Jeff. I deterred us. All right. So Jeff continues. The time travel is interesting, and I like the concept of points in time being moving. But the fact that the one thing they can think to do with the time machine is to come back and get soldiers seems problematic at best.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. Do you think they could have done something smarter with this technology to go back 30 years in the past than to just recruit humans to fight these aliens?
Not necessarily, but I think that the move is not to go 30 years of the past, but you go even further into the past.
I don't think they had any control. I think for whatever reason, the technology that they created a signpost 30 years in the past.
A lamp post?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I don't think they had a way back any other time.
Okay.
I think what would have been smarter, though, I think it's interesting to come back and say, we need more soldiers because everybody's dead, and so we're going to take from the past.
Yeah.
Which I guess could, I mean, it creates a paradox, because what if you draft
you're gonna create somebody, a paradox anyway,
what if you draft somebody from the past who hasn't yet had the kid, who, like, what if, you know, what if yeah. You know, who was the lieutenant you know, Lieutenant Herter, Hunter, what was her name?
Lieutenant Hart.
Lieutenant Hart, yeah. Like, what if Lieutenant Hart's father was pulled into the future in the draft, killed, yeah, and then never had Lieutenant Hart in the first place?
Great point. Yeah, that's a dad paradox.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, there were lots of these grandfather paradoxes that, yeah, we could have.
Yeah, there's a lot of grandfather paradoxes. This, I don't want to get into major spoilers, but a lot of the, like, you just kind of have to go with it, like, loops and paradoxes, gave me a lot of Dark vibes.
Yeah, but like Dark kinda, actually
did a good job.
The paradox was part of the story. That was part the whole story problem, was about paradoxes.
Yeah.
I
think that
they just don't address the paradoxes in this movie.
Yeah.
Except that you can't come to the future if you're still alive in the future.
Right. Which is weird and doesn't make.
Well, it's like they kind of are touching on they don't want to create a paradox, but then they create so many other paradoxes.
Yeah, by not doing that, you're creating a million other paradoxes that you aren't even like taking into account. So.
Yeah. I think, they definitely needed the soldiers, so I get bringing people into the future because they need fighters. I think that they should have treated the river kind of two ways, and that when they're coming back to the past, they're supplying information back to the past, so the past can work with 30 years in the future knowledge, technology, research. They could do some of the research into the toxin in the past as well as in the future, so they could kind of like parallel track, do two things at once instead of using the past as a way to get soldiers.
Which is where I thought they were going at the end before they discovered the ship under the iceberg part, which is I thought they were going to use the intervening 30 years to build a giant, like, defense system.
Right. Which they probably should have done, because I don't know how they knew that there was only one ship.
Yeah, exactly. So they should probably get to work on that anyway.
Right.
And start creating Starfleet, basically.
Yeah. Don't dance on the grave of all of the white spikes, because there might be more work to do in the future. There could be more white spikes. Use that.
So,
all right, I'll keep going down Jeff's note because we keep going on tangents off.
Jeff.
All right, and so Jeff says, and that every government in the world just went along with it and implemented a worldwide draft seems pretty far-fetched.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's not far-fetched because, like, if the people in power can just be like, well, let's send all these like underlings, let's draft all these underlings to die. Like, nobody who's in power in any of these governments was getting drafted.
Right. And it worked in Independence Day.
Yeah.
Where the entire world banded together to fight the aliens.
I think the global coordination, I think you could do a whole movie about the, like, that intervening year in between them learning about the Tomorrow War, you know, the white spikes and what we get, you know, that news clip that we get could have been a whole movie about the world adapting.
And I want it to star Kiefer Sutherland as Jack Bauer and Marianne as her character, Nora.
You don't want to say her last name?
She's also Chloe.
Yes.
And he can be like, damn it, we're running out of time. Yeah. The time jump is going to be in 7 days. We're running out of time.
Mary Lynn Radskip.
I can't say it.
Yeah. No. All right. Even though I did like how they only took people who they would be dead at that point in the future, the tech in the future seems very lame. Cars, guns, armor, all because they are made right now. We haven't advanced anything in 30 years. Jeff, we've been in a war for 30 years. They're not, they're Defense Production Act. They're manufacturing weapons. They aren't having time to create a new iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. And finally, lastly, seems like the ending was a weird twist. That he made it back with the toxin to kill them all. Should have ended it. Instead, the same governments that quickly implemented a worldwide draft suddenly aren't interested in preventing the war from happening in the first place. The ending was fun and dramatic, but it just seemed like it was a way for them to blow up more stuff. Yeah. Make his character make up with his dad and redeem the fact that he leaves his daughter. Lots of weird plot holes and problems, but all in all, I still liked it. I gave it a 3.5.
I don't necessarily disagree. I mean, it did feel, the ending does feel a little tacked on, but I still kind of liked it.
I think they wanted to show, the ending wanted to show that, like, the government is going to be anti-science and anti-knowledge, right, even when they have a solution in front of them. And then when something works, then they're very quick to take credit.
Yeah, it's running the it's cramming the global warming current issue theme down our throats. Yeah. For sure.
Ooh, all right. I just had an idea for a suggestion for.
And it, here's my question, and maybe I just missed it in a line or something. What exactly was Chris Pratt's falling out problem with his dad? Was that it just that he enlisted to go to Iraq?
No, it was that his dad was basically absent from their life after his mom died. So they had this, that was the whole discussion in the beginning where,
okay. I must have zoned out during that.
Yeah. Part. I mean, yeah. It was just a lot of exposition there where he said, when we buried your wife, your mother and me or something like that. I don't know. J.K. Simmons was an absent father, which again, we're getting some interesting stuff with, you know, the father who was a veteran who was had PTSD and depression after the war, was absent from the life of their child.
Yeah.
Basically what is going to happen to Dan when he gets back from the future war, you know, again, he's absent from his daughter and then he's no longer part of her life, except this time something changes for whatever reason. And he does come back.
Time is a circle.
Yes, exactly. All right. Well, that is everything from Jeff. I do think, I think we touched on everything. He talks about the way for his dad to come back and, you know, make up with his daughter. I did think it was weird when Dan returns to the house after destroying the white spikes that he's like bringing in the recycling can, but like limping. It was just incredibly cheesy.
He's trying to show that he's like normal dad. You know,
but like can barely walk because he's been in a fight with these space aliens. Also, I wonder how they got rescued because it seemed like their jet ski or their snow skis were all destroyed. And everybody else
except
from their
Charlie's
crew.
Maybe? Charlie's
yeah, I guess
there,
they
right?
all the three of them were riding Charlie's like a jet ski.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for the long note, Jeff. 3.5 from Jeff. Let's hear what Olin has to say.
Right. Olin says, most interesting thing was the 2023 British government setup they had with Conservative Theresa May leading negotiations and Labour old-timer Gordon Brown having the diplomatic photo shoots. For an American-centric film, very disappointed that they didn't try to have a stab at the American administration in a similar way or vein. Maybe have President Mike Pence with Nancy Pelosi as Secretary of State. I'm okay with them sort of not diving too deep into who's running these governments and that sort of thing at the time.
I mean, I think the Secretary of State or Secretary of Defense, whoever we see at the end, the government official, like he's very much looks like Mike Pompeo. So I think it's supposed to be like a similar administration. Also, you got to remember this movie was made during the Trump administration.
Good point. Apart from that, terrible script, terrible line readings, very annoying direction. Seemed like the worst World Cup final party at a house and at any house as well. No one seemed to have any interest. Some of the aliens looked pretty cute though. One and a half out of five. It was pretty much a standard American World Cup party, right? I would say.
We'll have to see how Christmas / World Cup parties go next year.
Yeah, for sure.
Would you eat tuna Santa?
No, I wouldn't. I would eat tuna melt, though, right now.
But what about tuna in the shape of Santa?
No thanks.
There were lots of references to Santa. They also called J.K. Simmons Santa at one point.
Yeah. Who were the two teams in the World Cup? Did we figure it out?
One was Brazil, and the other one, I was trying to figure it out. It looked like it was just kind of generic European team. I did ask Olin about it last night when I was watching the movie. And he said, by his estimation, the center circle. Oh, wait, that different message. what did he say? Now I got to find the message.
Brazil.
He said some sort of French / Scottish hybrid is what he said.
Weird.
And he said they should have had a man or two back for that corner kick.
That's just bad football.
Brazil winning the World Cup or about to win the World Cup. Probably not that far fetched.
Fair enough. Yeah, I'll take it.
All right. 1.5 from Olin. Megan the Librarian says, this was okay, but if you've watched a lot of sci-fi movies, you will spend the entire time mentally noting every other movie that it's stealing from. Yeah. Kind of bothers me that something so derivative got made. Surely there are better ways to spend that money. It's not so bad it's good. Doesn't really fit the genre of self-consciously absurd action movies because it seems to take itself rather seriously. It's just bland. Mm-hmm. Guess that's why they got the number 4 ranked Chris to star. Boy. Heyo, sorry, I ruined your joke, Megan. I said start. The time travel logic in this movie is pretty bad, and the entire premise makes no sense. Why would you send people from the past to the future in a devastating future war unless your goal is to make sure humanity is entirely wiped out even earlier? The Terminator strategy where you send people back to prevent the war from ever happening is clearly the way to go. So Megan and I, same page here.
Absolutely.
It doesn't make sense to go to the future.
Yep, I agree.
They finally figure it out in the last 40 minutes or so. Great job. Ironically, these characters should have watched more sci-fi movies.
You can't build a future if you don't have a past.
2.5 stars from Megan.
Yep. So quick thing, you know, and I think we've probably done this before. What is your current Chris ranking?
I think we probably did this after we did
El Royale.
Bad Times of the El Royale.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the only two Chris's, right? We haven't done any Chris Pine, and we haven't done any Chris Evans, right?
No, we haven't done any Evans's or Pines's.
Yeah.
But I can.
I think Pine is my number four Chris.
Interesting. But you're also not a Star Trek guy, and you also haven't seen Into the Woods.
And I don't
seen yet.
Yeah, and I'm not a big Wonder Woman fan.
Yeah, I don't even like it in the Wonder Woman movies, but
yeah. So I mean, I think Evans is number one just because Captain America movies are so good. Then I would go Hemsworth,
right,
and then Pratt. Although him and Pine are pretty close, to be honest. Well, yeah, Star Lord and Pratt do things that I'm not a huge fan of.
Do you have a Chris fifth rank Chris?
No, not really. I don't know. I mean, Chris Nolan, but he's higher than not fifth on that list.
He'd be number one. Yeah. But Chris Maloney?
He's higher. No. He doesn't count. He's not one of Chris's. What's your Chris ranking? Is it the same as mine?
Yeah. So I think at this point, it's probably Hemsworth over Evans, but it's close. They're like one and two. Mm-hmm. And depending on the movie I'm watching, they could jump over each other. It's pretty much Evans or Hemsworth. And then Pine in third and Pratt in fourth.
Okay, so basically the same.
They're basically the same.
Yeah. Do you anticipate any other Chris's joining the fray?
I mean, you know, 30 years ago, we could have put Chris Cooper in there probably, but, you know.
Ludacris Bridges?
He doesn't really do enough acting.
Yeah, Chris Bridges, Ludacris.
I look into Ludacris. Ludacris would be good.
Wait till I see F9 before I can
put Ludacris on my list. All right. Anything else from Megan's feedback we want to touch on?
No, I don't think so. I think we got all of it.
Okay, great. Jim says, Jim Crumbly writes it, says, was the plot for the Tomorrow War written by a bot? It felt like a bit of the Terminator, Arrival, Fallen Skies, and The Thing thrown into a blender. Chris Pratt was good and a couple of other actors, and the effects were fine, but the writing was just bad. 2 out of 5. So we haven't really talked about the director, Chris McKay, at all in our conversation. This is his second major movie and his first non-animated movie. His previous big movie was Lego Batman. Do you think this was a how do you feel about this as a first directorial effort? Does he need to go back to school?
No, I thought it was fine. I think it's it was, you know, I didn't mind how overstuffed this movie was. I think a lot of listeners did. Yes, it's derivative of other movies. It borrows from a lot of other movies. But you know what? That sounds like the perfect movie for a movie connection podcast to talk about.
Because it's
very easy
to
find lots of connections and suggestions for future movies.
And that's also sort of on par for the guy that made Lego Batman and directed a bunch of Robot Chicken. Mm-hmm. Like, his entire job through those two works was to make movies and TV shows that were referencing 50 other things in one thing. So it's not too surprising that his first major studio film that is live action would also be the same sort of thing. But I kind of agree with Jim that I wish they had done a better job of making it a little more of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge as to the references. Like, be self-aware that you're making these references.
But they did they only did with one, but they did reference Will Smith. And did you mention that he made Robot Chicken as well?
Yeah, that did. Yeah,
Robot Chicken. Because, you know, again, Robot Chicken also, like, you know, is parodying and referencing tons of other pop culture.
Exactly, things. Yeah. 50 other things in a 15-minute episode. Yeah.
I mean, so it's sort of like that the showrunner of Loki was one of the showrunners on Rick and Morty, because it's in that similar vein where you're dealing with lots of different timelines. And if you're interested in, you know, something animated that deals with time loops and paradoxes and fun sci-fi chicanery, Rick and Morty is definitely up your alley for that.
For goodness.
So I thought that stuff was fine. I'm surprised this movie only had one writer, to be honest, and that's Zach Dean, fellow Zach. He's lower on the Zach rankings, in my opinion. This movie needed somebody else to write it. It needed at least somebody to come in and kind of check a lot of the time travel mechanics and get some dialogue in there to just take care of some of these plot holes and
they needed to punch
and paradoxes. Yes. And I think also they probably could have used Mike Mitchell to punch up the script a little bit and to get some jokes
in the dialogue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because yeah, there wasn't much quotable. Where was Weiger on that one?
Yeah,
you know
exactly. There wasn't much quotable in this movie. I mean, it's interesting when I watch these movies and I have to write down a quote to open the show with. There really wasn't much. I had three written down. I had "Nobody is eating my tuna, Santa." I had "Whatever your background, you're now heroes," which is kind of just like that's what I went with because it's like a fun announcement. And then "I think we found your ice cube" was the other one that I thought about referencing.
Nice.
So, yeah. For once, I think a movie needed either a different writer or a couple more writers.
Yeah, it needed a punch up for sure. I agree. All right. So should we get into our final ratings?
Yeah. Why did people say the thing? Why did Jim say the thing? Just because of the final act?
Oh, it's the ending because of the, final act and the ice. Yeah. The snow battle and the...
Yeah. I never saw Fallen Skies, but I remember seeing lots of ads for it during NBA playoff games.
Yeah.
So, all right. Yeah. You want to go first? You want me to go first?
I will go first. So... I think we have talked through this movie pretty exhaustively at this point.
This is going to be a long episode.
As far as what we liked, what we didn't like, there was more that I liked than didn't like, despite, you know, our conversation. I don't think it's a great movie. I mean, it's certainly not going to go up there with a lot of the 4 to 5 star movies that we've mentioned along the way here that we compared it to. But it's not, like, awful, but if you want to be a time travel movie, you have to do better with the actual time travel in explaining it and covering up some of the paradoxes. So the listeners gave this a 2.88 on average. I'm going to actually go slightly below the listeners and give this a 2.5.
Ah, 2.5. All right. Yeah. That's what I've given recently. So for me... I actually higher than you and the listeners. I'm giving it a 3.5. I'm pretty much right in line with Jeff for very rarely does this happen. Nice. But overall, I just had a lot of fun watching this with you. It's stupid. But I do think it does some smart stuff. I do think sometimes it's not as smart as it thinks, but I liked, I liked the theme of climate change. I liked the theme of PTSD. Not sure if the movie really does gives you anything like how do we solve this or what are some productive actions we can take. I love time travel movies. I'm a sucker for time travel, and partially I like it because I love to like think about these paradoxes and find the flaws and the holes in the time travel. So I've been hard on this movie, but I do think like for a movie that I didn't have to pay anything to watch, it was good. And it was a fun couple hours to spend last night watching it. Had I seen this in the theater, I might be a little bit lower. Like you said, probably never going to watch this movie again. But
here's my question. Do you think that this movie would have been a success if they had a chance to release it in theaters?
I got to think a big budget summer blockbuster starring Chris Pratt would do pretty well.
Okay.
But I don't think this movie is a success at all releasing on Amazon. I've not really heard anybody talking about it.
Yeah. I mean, I believe that we're the only podcast that I've seen release an episode on it. Everyone else has pretty much ignored it.
And the reviews are, I mean, it's, you know, if you look at like the different people I follow, it's right around where our listeners are, a little under 3 or 2.5.
And I mean, I would say I probably am closer to a 2.75 than 2.5, but I mean, I think the average of a 2.98, which we're rounding up to a 3, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And it's good. It's fine.
And I'm somewhere between a 3 and a 3.5, but I liked it. I liked that it tried to do something. And, you know, if you just look at it like, oh, these people are just idiots. And, all they could think to do was to pull soldiers from the past instead of actually using their future knowledge to try to prevent the.
Right.
I mean, maybe they didn't want to prevent the war from happening because if they prevent the war from happening, they're preventing their own existence. I don't know.
And I will say it was also really fun. You know, and I had to kind of separate all of the buildup that we had for this movie from listening. You know, we talked about it a little, but there was a lot of buildup for me as a Doughboys listener for this movie over the last year, ever since, Mike Mitchell announced that he was going to be in the film and they were recording podcasts from Atlanta as the film was being made. He's had a whole bunch of the cast and crew on the show. On the podcast from the movie on the podcast
Yeah, and including they had the composer a couple weeks ago. And I actually thought the score of this, something we didn't talk about, the score of this movie, I thought was great.
Yeah,
I every time I noticed the score, I was like, yeah, the score is totally matching kind of how I'm feeling right now. And it's, you know, again, it's similar to scores that you hear in other similar types of movies. But I thought the movie was scored really well, and I should have in front of me the name of the composer, and I don't have it in front of me. But yes, props to him maybe, for the score.
Yeah, and maybe I'm being too hard on it because I'm trying too hard to separate the buildup that I had from seeing Mike Mitchell in a movie and it getting hyped up on the podcast to then actually watching it. So maybe I'm being a little harder on it than I should be.
Lorne Balfe was the composer. I just looked up.
He was really good. He's done a bunch of stuff.
He has. His filmography, and it might come up later, other movies that he's done. Brendan, I will say, if you liked seeing Mike Mitchell on your big screen, you should watch Love. It's only a couple seasons on Netflix, and he's a co-star in that, and he's in a lot more of that than he is in this. So.
Shouts to the Spoon Man.
Yeah.
Shouts to Spoon Nation.
I recommend Love. Love's a fun, spin on the rom-com genre show on Netflix. Very easy to get through. I watched it in just a couple days. So, or a couple weeks, probably. Not a couple days.
Mm.
All right. Well, before we move on to what we're going to be watching next week, what do you got for connections to Stargate?
Yeah. So, obviously, we talked about... complicated father figures and people with some form of post-traumatic stress in Stargate. Jack O'Neill is going through the recent loss of his son as he travels through the Stargate, and he has to deal with all of the trauma that came from that as he's discovering a whole new world through the Stargate. So there's the whole scientist as well. Dr. Jackson is basically the Sam Richardson character, and they're both, really afraid when they get over there.
Well, and Dan's a scientist as well.
Yeah, Dan's a scientist, science teacher, yeah.
Right, yeah, I have scientists and soldiers go through the wormhole, is what I wrote down as my title connection.
And there's a lot of, sort of puzzle-solving decoding of how to prevent, the aliens from coming to Earth.
Ancient aliens, ancient Egyptians and Stargate. So
yeah, we're not saying the aliens were here, but the aliens were here.
This movie, I mean, it's definitely, we talked a lot about Independence Day, but this movie did just feel like a Roland Emmerich movie dumb action apocalyptic blow 'em up movie. Yeah. I mean, that's what Roland Emmerich does. So yeah. It was not directed by Roland Emmerich, but it might as well have been.
It was basically a tribute to Roland Emmerich.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely. All right, and what do you got to other movies that we did this year?
So obviously this continues War Month, or maybe even concludes War Month before we go. Soldiers being sent on a covert op. Connects us to all of our different war films. We have complicated relationships with your parents, or more specifically a daddy in Young Frankenstein, in Crouching Tiger,
it's been a running theme in almost every movie this year. There's bad dads or bad parents.
Bad dads,
I also have characters falling to their death in this. We had that. We've had that a couple times, and we had that once again with Murray. As well.
Yep. And then we had obviously the soccer connection in Damn United.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's good.
With the World Cup and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then what else?
Just that Vietnam era, right, where J.K. Simmons was serving. And that probably ties in more with movies from last year that we had more of that Vietnam era. But, we did have that.
We had the whole recruitment thing, and, people are getting recruited in Stripes and Private Benjamin, and you get sort of the, I wish we had gotten more of a training scene like we get in Stripes and Private Benjamin, but I was okay that we didn't.
Well, they even addressed that in the movie, though. They said, you're not going to have your basic training. And I don't remember the Cowan played by Mike Mitchell, or if it was Charlie who said, I was really looking forward to the basic training. One thing that was interesting. So Mike Mitchell plays a character named Cowan.
Yes.
And the second lead producer on this was Rob Cowan. Yeah. Was the character named after the producer?
I would assume so. Yes.
Okay. It's very random to name a character. Like, just like he's the one producer got a character named after him, and it's a guy who gets killed really early.
Maybe he just reminded him of Mike Mitchell or something. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And then, so for our title connection, are you fine with soldiers and scientists through the wormhole? Or do you
that
better?
Sounds great to me.
All right. Cool. Soldiers and scientists through the wormhole. I would love to get the number 7 in here, but I just don't think we really can. But the number 7, again, is a connection to both movies.
All right.
And what do you got for movie map?
So this one is fun. So there's a little movie where there's a bearded character who has an estranged relationship with one of his children. And at the end of that movie, they have a reconciliation with a giant hug where he gets to hug his granddaughter. And I'm talking about Home Alone.
Another Christmas movie.
Yep, another Christmas movie as well. Yeah. So when I realized that connection, I was just like grinning ear to ear. So Home Alone has a weird movie map to this with the J.K. Simmons character and the relationship with his granddaughter. Obviously, we could take it to Apocalypse Now and Thunder and Lion as far as the soldiers. The soldiers and the exhaustion and the PTSD and the...
I thought you said PTSD just now. PTSD. Emphasized the S. I don't know if I could beat Home Alone. I like Home Alone as one. I think Thin Red Line is good. I was just going to go Sliding Doors just because of the alternate universes that we get at the end of this movie. But I don't think it's a super strong connection. Congratulations. You win the movie map this week. Not that we keep track. And you win nothing. So, all right.
Put the title connection in the space.
Soldiers and Scientists Through the Wormhole is our title connection. All right. Well, Brendan, it is that time once again. It is time to pick our next ladder rung based on suggestions sent in from the listeners and suggestions you and I brought as the host. So we can pick our movie for next week. Once you do pick our movie for next week, make sure you email us, themovieladder@gmail.com, or tweet at us at @laddermovie. Let us know your feedback, what you think about the movie, what your star rating is, 1 to 5 stars, and what we should connect to next week as we roll along through July. And, of course, all the movies that are suggested from both the listeners and the hosts are added to our Letterboxd watch list, so check that out. Yep. All right. As we kick things off, we have Jeff's connections. His first one is Back to the Future.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, you said the first one for time travel. I actually thought there was Back to the Future Part 2 might have been, and maybe that'll come up later, but I think 2 might be a stronger connection to this movie because of the branch timelines that come
up. Exactly. Yeah, it might come up later. I had an idea.
Two other movies. One is Jurassic World and the other is Passengers, both starring Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
I have heard Passengers is like the worst movie ever.
One of the worst movies ever made. Yeah. Passengers was on my short list though of possible.
So one question I had, and this is actually going back to Tomorrow War. This isn't a spoiler at all. Yes. But I remember Mike Mitchell on Doughboys was often talking about how he was going to be in a movie with Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence. Was Jennifer Lawrence originally supposed to be in the Tomorrow War and drop out, or am I just confusing that?
I think you might be confusing it. Yeah.
Okay, because obviously Passengers is Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Olin's suggestions are Armageddon, overlong but proper blockbuster where a man is driven by his daughter to save the world.
There you go.
Next one, Promising Young Woman, Sam Richardson in a supporting role. Mm-hmm. Also themes of predestination.
I saw Promising Young Woman. I liked Promising Young Woman.
I did too. Yes, it was. That was a good one. One of my top 3 movies of last year, I think. Mm-hmm. And finally, Mike Bassett, England Manager from 2001, based around the FIFA World Cup, like the opening of the Tomorrow War. Great British satirical comedy about taking on the English role in relationships with player media, the FA, and the public. Great timing as well with England doing well in the Euros.
Mm-hmm. I think that may have come up before as well from Olin, and I was intrigued by it. Yeah.
Yeah. Olin trying his best to jinx the English as they're playing in their semifinal tomorrow. Hopefully they win. All right. Next, we've got Megan the Librarian. 1984, The Terminator. Kids causing their fathers to time travel, future war. Mm-hmm. Megan just straight up spoiling The Terminator in her suggestion.
I mean, I spoiled it during the podcast, but sure.
That's true. Yeah. Spoilers all about. I would assume most people know that. I don't think that's a spoiler.
I would hope so. Yeah.
The next one, this was on my short list, Edge of Tomorrow from 2014, time travel, fighting giant aliens. I actually looked at Letterboxd for this movie because I was hoping you hadn't seen it. I was thinking this might have been one of the random blind spots you had.
This is one of the ones that you bugged me about for a little while until I finally saw it.
Bugged you? Yes.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Next, her suggestion is The X-Files, a.k.a. Fight the Future. Like the Tomorrow War, it features a snowy location and a UFO that is full of creatures in incubators. I have seen this movie, Brendan.
Yeah.
Don't remember it at all.
I have, too. It's been a really long time. I would be actually excited to revisit it. It would also be funny to go back to not a movie that got turned into a TV show, but a movie that was based on a TV show.
Spawned from a TV show into a movie. Yeah, it's true. So we've done a lot of movies that turned into TV shows.
Yeah.
All right, and then her fourth suggestion, Contact from 1997. Mm-hmm. To me, Interstellar is like Nolan decided Contact would be better if the dad were the lead instead of the daughter. And obviously, the Tomorrow War takes the same position. So I guess Interstellar is a closer connection. However, in my opinion, Contact is the best version of this story. So, Contact.
Both starring McConaughey.
True. All right. And then, maybe if we did Contact, we'd do Interstellar the next week. So we might just have our movies mapped out for us. All right. Stefan also saying Edge of Tomorrow. My only recommendation, because I love this movie, we need more Tom Cruise this year. Futuristic War takes place near tomorrow. I don't know if we had any Tom Cruise this year. I'm sure we have, right? Top of my head, we had a lot of Tom Cruise last year. Have not had any Tom Cruise this year. So
nope.
All right, and Jim Crumley, his Ladder Rung is another time travel movie with prominent child parts. Terry Gilliam's 1981 movie Time Bandits. That's come up a couple times.
I like Time Bandits. Time Bandits is a really weird, fun movie. Stars a bunch of diminutive actors, including Kenny Baker, who's the man inside R2-D2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Time Bandits, actually never seen it. Blind spot for me.
Yep.
I think that might be the only blind spot. The Mike Bassett in Passengers also blind spots for me.
Gotcha.
Just as we're going through what our blind spots are. All right, so I get to go first this week with our host suggestions. Let's see. So I have a lot written down. So I did have Edge of Tomorrow, but I actually had two Tom Cruise Battles the Alien War movies. So I'll go with the other one, which is one I did not like when it first came out, but I'd be interested to revisit it. That's War of the Worlds.
And that's the one I haven't seen.
Yes. That's Spielberg, Tom Cruise, summer blockbuster. Then let's see. I will not do Interstellar. I had that on my short list. Sorry, not supposed to talk about our shortlist until you talk. Next one I will do is so this movie reminded me at times of another movie that just went on streaming earlier this year about an apocalyptic battle against some sort of monsters, also starring a Guardians of the Galaxy or a Guardian of the Galaxy, and that is Zack Snyder's zombie movie Army of the Dead, which was on Netflix a few months ago. I don't think any of us saw it. I think it got similar reviews to The Tomorrow War, but I think it seems like a pretty natural comparison, and I don't know much about it except that it's like an army of the dead. The Army of the Dead. Next one is Safety Not Guaranteed. That is a movie about time travel, and I believe it did share a cast connection with somebody in this movie, and I had written it down, and I do not have who it was in front of me.
You can look that up when I do mine.
Yeah, quickly trying to remember who it was that was in Safe Net Guarantee, but the movie does revolve around time travel. It's been on my watch list for a while, and so I would like to see it, and I'll have to look up what the connection was. And finally, actually two more. Another one about climate change has the word tomorrow in the title. It is a Roland Emmerich one. That is Day After Tomorrow.
Yep, was on my short list. Yeah. Also for a title connection, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
The Day After Tomorrow. Yeah.
Actually, that one I did write down a little late. I didn't have that originally. And then finally, we talked about the composer of The Tomorrow War, and that was composer Lauren Balfe. Also, the actress who played Murray, the child actress who played Murray, is going to be appearing in another movie coming up this week. It is not yet out, so we could do a back-to-back new release because she is going to be in Black Widow. The composer from this movie is also from Black Widow, so I thought we could do Black Widow as next week's movie. First foray into the MCU. So.
Okay. And the actress you're looking for from Safety Not Guaranteed was Chloe.
Mary Lynn Radziszewski. Yep. Yeah, that's right.
Damn it, Chloe. I actually did look for a 24 movie that I could throw in and did not find one.
Didn't they do a 24?
But I don't think she's in it.
Oh, she's not in it. Okay.
She must not be in it because it's not on her letterbox. Okay. Or she had it scrubbed from the record. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you had a few in, everybody had a few in there that were on my short list, including Interstellar, I thought about, but I'm not going to throw in there. A couple of obvious ones that I'm not going to do that were on my also-rans, I would really love to do Aliens.
Yeah, I thought about Aliens, yeah.
Day After Tomorrow was on my short list. One I'm going to throw in there, if we're going to stick with newer movies, which it seems like you're angling towards.
A little bit.
A parent protecting their children from an alien invasion also maps to Quiet Place 2.
Oh.
People will need to have seen Quiet Place 1, but Quiet Place 2. One that came to me very late as you were talking about people coming into a psychological paradox when they figure out some way to know their own future. And that brought me to Minority Report.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's a great one. Yeah. I wonder what you were thinking of when you had that idea. It's always fun when one of us thinks of a movie on the podcast and it's like, ooh, and then they announce it.
I also thought about a J.K. Simmons movie that I have not seen where he's third billed, but again, I don't know how much he's actually in the movie. But that's 21 Bridges.
Mm.
And then I'm going to do 5 again as well.
Okay. Yeah, go for it.
I also thought about someone interrupting a football match to warn them of the end of the world. And I thought about Bane in Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, that's fun. Yeah.
But that was a fun connection. Mm-hmm. And then here's my final one. And this is actually going to piggyback on a listener suggestion. I thought it would be really fun if we did both Back to the Future 1 and 2 as a double feature.
Mm. Would that be two different podcasts, or would it be one podcast about both?
We would do it as one podcast.
One podcast about Back to the Future 1 and 2.
Yeah.
All right. Interesting. Look at you changing the format going into the future. All right. Why don't you read off what we got, and then we can pick our finals.
All right. Let's scroll back up to the top. All right. So we have Back to the Future, Jurassic World, Passengers, Armageddon, Promising Young Woman, Mike Bassett, England Manager, The Terminator, Edge of Tomorrow, The X-Files, Contact, Edge of Tomorrow Again, Time Bandits, War of the Worlds, Army of the Dead, Safety Not Guaranteed, Day After Tomorrow, Black Widow, Quiet Place Due, Minority Report, 21 Bridges, Dark Knight Rises, and Back to the Future 1 and 2 as combo.
All right, go for it.
All right, so this is going to be tough. For the listener pick, I think I've been on an X-Files kick recently, actually, because I've been rewatching the X-Files along with Mike and Angela Bloom over at Post-Show Recaps on the Bloom Files. I would love to rewatch the X-Files movie, and I think it would be really fun. I'm going to pick the X-Files from the listener's pick.
All right, you're going to pick the X-Files. So that's the first X-Files movie, right?
Not yes, the first
one. Didn't they make a second one, too?
They did make a second one that was even worse.
Even worse? What do you mean, even? all right, for me, let's see. I'll go with my listener pick next. I am between two movies, and that is Edge of Tomorrow and Time Bandits.
I know you really wanted to do Edge of Tomorrow. I mean, I think
Edge of Tomorrow is like such a strong connection to this movie in so many ways. And I'm a big fan of Edge of Tomorrow from the last time I saw it. I'm pulled a little bit of the Time Bandits because it's a blind spot for me, but I think especially the Colonel character in Tomorrow War maps so well to Emily Blunt's character in Edge of Tomorrow. Like very similar, and both like just great soldiers and really good action stars. So I gotta go Edge of Tomorrow.
I agree.
Time for a little bit of Tom Cruise.
I intentionally didn't put it on my list because I knew it was going to come up. Another clever also rant I had was I thought about, since we did Tomorrow, going Yesterday.
Oh, that would have been fun, yeah.
But anyway.
I had Tomorrowland as well on my list for the second week in a row.
Yeah.
And also Tomorrow About Never Time Dies. As well. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
I've already done a podcast about Tomorrow Never Dies.
So you've got a couple on your list that I'm really intrigued by. I mean, not having seen War of the Worlds, that's also a Tom Cruise, and that would be really fun and put us in a Tom Cruise paradox with Edge of Tomorrow. I also like the idea of just based on title of doing The Day After Tomorrow, even though, you know, the movie's fine.
The movie's great. I love it. I loved it.
I know
the movie's all about climate change.
I know you love that movie. There's a lot of thematic resonance with The Day After Tomorrow being the next movie we do. The connection of Black Widow is a little too thin, even though it would be really, really fun. And I'll probably talk about Black Widow next week anyway.
Right.
I think I'm going to go with The Day After Tomorrow.
All right. I thought you were going to go World of the Worlds. Oh, I'm surprised.
No, you know what? I'm going to go with the one I haven't seen. You're right. I need to go with War of the Worlds.
I mean, don't let me influence. You could do.
Instead of a movie based off a TV show, it's a movie based off of a radio play.
True, yeah. I thought Black Widow was going to be the winner. I almost announced at the beginning of the podcast.
Well, because they're white spiders are the aliens.
I mean, there's a ton of connections. It's a movie that came out in July of 2021, available both on streaming. Chris Pratt, maybe he makes a cameo in, you know, maybe Star-Lord makes a cameo in Black Widow. We don't know.
There's just not enough there until we actually see it.
There's a cast member in both movies.
Is there?
Yes, the girl who plays Murray in The Tomorrow War is also in Black Widow.
You're really kidding me, trying to get me to change to Black Widow.
No, I don't want you to change. Because I think that Black Widow, like, it requires people to either go to the movie theater or shell out $30 on Disney Plus to watch it.
Right,
so.
And also, I mean, you're going to need to have seen a bunch of other movies. You know,
probably. I don't know. This one might be a little bit removed, but yeah, it would have been fun to do. But I
think we could do a bonus podcast on Black Widow.
Maybe we'll see.
I think we could definitely do a bonus podcast on Black Widow.
Yeah, we'll see.
But sure.
Yeah, but unlike the Tomorrow War, there's going to be a million Black Widow podcasts next.
That's
week.
Also true. That's
we
also
might be the only Tomorrow War podcast this week. all right. So from you, I mean, we got to cruise things up. It is not like me to not pick Back to the Future, but although it's come up a lot of times on this podcast, but let's go with another Steven Spielberg, Tom Cruise. We're going Minority Report.
Nice. I love it.
So we have the X-Files. I think we got to remove the X-Files and just pick one of the three.
Isn't Duchovny related to Tom Cruise in some way too? Isn't he like his cousin or something?
His Duchovny? I don't know.
His Duchovny?
Yeah.
Okay, get X-Files out of there then. And we'll just have it. Should we put it to the listeners?
We're X-ing the X-Files.
Should we put it to a listener choice for a cruise off?
The problem with a listener choice is that we're not going to have an answer. Like
that's a good point. That's a good point. We need plenty of time.
I don't know. I'm trying to think. I think we should maybe do it based on, like, let's take a look at streamability for these movies.
Yeah, so, streamability and see who's seen what as well.
So what's blind spot for you? The only blind spot for you is War of the Worlds.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. So,
and I was pretty drunk when I watched Minority Report.
You were. Okay. Oh, man. Minority Report also on Amazon Prime as well as Paramount Plus. War of the Worlds is on just like the TNT app with commercials. So that's rentable. And Edge of Tomorrow is
Netflix.
Is it on Netflix? I don't know. It's taking a lot. No, Edge of Tomorrow is only on like a DirecTV stream.
Oh, bummer.
So it looks like unless we do Minority Report, people are going to have to shell out a couple bucks, a couple shekels. But these are all good summer movies.
Absolutely.
So we have Minority Report from 2002, directed by Steven Spielberg. We have War of the Worlds from 2005, directed by Steven Spielberg.
Yep.
And Edge of Tomorrow from 2014, directed by Doug Liman.
Okay. Is the connection strong enough for Minority Report?
I mean, it's few. Yeah, I think so. Because I think all three are very strong.
How you change your present knowing your future. Yeah.
Yeah. Like knowing your future. And, you know, it's not about war. This is about future crime. I mean, yeah, I think any of these and probably all of these are going to come up.
Again and again.
I mean, I think Edge of Tomorrow. Well, Minority Report's probably the best of the three.
I think that we deserve, that the listeners deserve a high quality movie next week, given the last couple of weeks. I think we give them Minority Report, and I think it's our July, summer, midsummer present to them.
We're doing midsummer?
Yeah, we're doing midsummer. This is our midsummer gift to them, and we give them Minority Report.
I mean, Edge of Tomorrow might be the better movie. Both Edge of Tomorrow and Edge of Tomorrow and Minority Report both have 3.7 stars. Edge of Tomorrow is a little bit shorter. Megan the Librarian is a half star higher on Edge of Tomorrow than she is on Minority Report. This is just the Megan the Librarian actually, 3 to 3.5 stars club between these three movies. Looking at
actually, you know what? This actually makes Edge of Tomorrow actually makes more sense because it also underwent a title change.
That's true. Probably a lot of movies do.
But... Going from Tomorrow War to Ghost Draft to Tomorrow War, and
right
now Edge of Tomorrow is Live Die Repeat.
I think Edge of Tomorrow definitely has the strongest connection between the like alien monsters, the sci-fi angle, the time travel angle. Some of the characters map pretty closely.
I agree.
We've got Bill Paxton showing up, so you know you want to talk about aliens. We've got Bill Paxton in this one, I think we should do Edge of Tomorrow.
Let's do it.
Yeah,
sounds good to me.
So sorry, you're gonna have to show out for this one. A couple bucks is available to stream. Maybe who knows? Sometimes these movies are actually streaming, and they just aren't showing up when you do the Letterboxd search. Correct. But this movie has come up before.
It does.
And actually all of these movies I think all three of these movies have come up before because we do love our Tom Cruise on the Movie Ladder podcast. What do you think, Edge of Tomorrow? When do you think this has come up before, just from other Tom Cruise movies?
Groundhog Day, obviously.
This is going to be our third time loop movie, Groundhog Day. Groundhog Day and what is it called, the murder one from last year.
Happy Death Day.
Yes.
Yeah, it probably came up on Happy Death Day as well. And then it probably also came up with Top Gun and who knows.
This is saying Magic Mike, XXL, it came up. The Girl, it came up. Stargate, it came up.
People really want us to watch this movie. So we're going to go. It's good that we're finally doing this. It's been requested that many times.
Maybe this is, I don't know why this is coming up in a search for Edge of Tomorrow. This is not, did not come up at Stargate.
Okay.
This is great podcasting. We'll see. We'll look up next week when it came up. Did not come. I don't know why it came up on a Google Docs search, because it did not come up on The Girl either.
All right.
Oh, there are connections to Edge of Tomorrow from Magic Mike. I don't know. Excellent. We'll see what it came up.
We'll do this off the pod. All right.
Yes. All right. So next week we are doing, and we also have a title connection from Tomorrow War to Edge of Tomorrow. So seriously,
Tomorrow War.
Yeah. There are so many connections between these two movies. Some might say that the Tomorrow War ripped off Edge of Tomorrow.
Tomorrow War. Yes.
Yeah. All right. And who knows, maybe War of the Worlds Minority Report will be right back in the fold next week, and we could just do, maybe we're going into cruise month. Summer.
Cruise control.
But our military month is sticking around for another week, because we're doing Edge of Tomorrow for lots.
Now we're going to cruise control.
Yeah, Edge of next week. All right. And so, Brendan, what are you going to watch this week?
Obviously, Black Widow. That's very exciting. I'm excited to see it. My mom is going to be in town this weekend, so I'm not really sure when I'm actually going to get to see it, but probably Sunday after she leaves. She's leaving Sunday morning, so... probably Sunday afternoon, I'll go up to the theater and see that. Loki episode 5 drops tomorrow morning on Disney Plus. So
I always forget that. Every Wednesday, I wake up and I'm like, oh crap, that's right.
You know exactly what time and date we record, which is Tuesday evenings. So tomorrow, Loki, and then The Bad Batch has been rolling along also on Fridays on Disney Plus. I've been having a good time with that. Unfortunately, no new Star Wars podcast from me for a little while, at least as far as on post-show recaps goes. But hopefully sometime in a couple months from now, we might have a wrap-up show or something when that batch finishes. Yeah. Well, the podcast got fired.
I'm just kidding. You didn't get fired. You're never going to get fired from this podcast.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Well, Stefan and Megan Librarian both suggested Edge of Tomorrow, so thank you for that suggestion. If you guys want to send in some voicemail clips, we were happy to play them. We haven't announced that the last couple of weeks, but if your suggestion gets picked, you are always welcome to email in a voice memo suggestion, and we'll edit it into the podcast.
Absolutely.
For me, yeah, like you, I'm going to try to see Black Widow. It'll be crazy if I see Black Widow before I see F9, but I am not committed. I am committed to the Mac of this all, and I am waiting until we watch Hobbs and Shaw and Fate of the Furious. I've already watched Fate of the Furious. Trying to badger Mac into watching those so we can record a podcast. If you missed it, him and I did release our podcast last week on Fast 6, Furious 7.
It was very fun.
Check those out, yes. That is on the For Your Ears Only feed. Furious Ears Only is the name of this project. And hopefully we're going to be recording our 8 and Hobbs and Shaw this week, which would be great. Then I can see F9. Maybe I do, who knows? Maybe I even do a double feature this weekend where I see F9 and Black Widow back to back.
That'd be nice.
Yeah. Who knows? Also trying to see Out of Sight for my personal ladder so that then I can go to No Sudden Move and catch up with you on that too. All the new releases. I'm on a lot of new releases lately.
Yeah, a lot of new stuff to catch up on. A lot of exciting stuff. So
hopefully you enjoyed this whole big time travel breakdown of the Tomorrow War, and you're ready to get back into more of that shenanigans next week with Edge of Tomorrow. Gotta rent it, but get it from your local library. I'm gonna put it in a request right now for the Blu-ray from my library to watch Edge of Tomorrow, also known as Live, Die, Repeat. We will get into all of that crazy titledness and everything with it next week. So, all right, anything left from you, Brendan?
Nope. You can find me on Twitter at FitzyBrendan or on Letterboxd at FitzyBrendan as well, or on Instagram at BrentFitz11.
And email Brendan, themovieladder at gmail.com.
Yeah, with your feedback and ratings. And damn it, Zach, we're running out of time.